with the Rising Billions. Disrupting tradition.
Always be closing.
Gaining exponential wisdom from street smart strategies.
I dream the kind of dreams that other people said would not be possible.
Free your mind. Nothing happens till something moves.
I'm a big fan of going all in on your strengths.
Create your blue ocean. Innovation and collaboration with competition.
Do you want to sell sugar water for the rest of your life? Or do you want to come with me and change the world?
Creating uncontested market space.
I worry that people don't tap into their strengths.
Wealth creation and a new economy entrepreneur.
There is a very thin dividing line between success and failure.
Witnessing unprecedented technology.
You can fail at what you don't want, so you might as well take a chance on doing what you love.
Welcome to the Think Bold, Be Bold Show with Christopher Campi and Alan Rich.
Hi, it's Christopher Campi with Think Bold, Be Bold, and I'm here with my awesome co-host, my only co-host, Alan Rich is in the house. How are you doing, Alan?
I'm doing great. Having a great morning. Happy to be alive and real appreciative of our guest today. And it's great to see your face, Chris. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. And, you know, the show is, becoming something of a thing, Alan. You know, we're getting a lot of attention and things have just been just going at light speed. Obviously, I launched a couple of different things and we're going on to C-Suite Radio, which is going to be really exciting at the summer, later in the summer. And we've got just an amazing lineup of guests that keep coming. And our guest today is going to be, with no exception, bringing you some goods. So get out your journal, make some notes. The golden nuggets always flow in this show. And Alan, without further ado, let's introduce him.
Awesome. You know, we get a chance to, as of late, opportunities and people and guests have really come our way. And for a while, you know, for probably the first several months, we were on the hunt. We were constantly looking for people, putting our flag up, throwing things up in the air, not really necessarily knowing exactly what to do. But that turned around pretty quick. And in this last year, we are being inundated, if that's a good, I'll use that word as a good word, for folks with lots of character and lots of value that want to be on the show. And that's an honorable place to be. It means we're doing something right. Somebody likes what we're doing and likes what we're talking about. And today's guest is no difference. You know, entrepreneurs, historically, the ones that have been around a long time, they don't work really on their business or even in their business. They work on scalable ideas. They work on ideas that bring a lot of value and a lot of wisdom and a lot of benefit to a large group of people. And then they attract, you know, the rest, whatever else is needed. And in that rest, well, that rest is where our guest today, Genius Zone, lies. So, Peter Winnick, welcome to Think Bold, Be Bold, my friend.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You betcha.
Well, Peter, thanks for taking some time out and having a chat with us. We always appreciate it, of course. And, you know, I always like to ask the first question and get the show on the road and, you know, help us understand, you know, the journey, you know, leadership and the things you've been working on and bringing people together and also bringing your wisdom to help them, you know, with what they're working on and growing. And let's just give us a little bit of background on yourself so the audience, for what Alan wasn't able to fill in, you can give us some of those gaps.
Sure. I don't know how far we want to go back, but, you know, I'm the CEO
wait,
and founder.
The minute you open your eyes.
Yeah, it was a dark and stormy night. Yeah, exactly. So, so I'm the founder and CEO of Thought Leadership Leverage. We're a boutique consulting firm, and we work exclusively with authors, thought leaders, and speakers that have content that has a business application. So we don't do self-help, et cetera. How I got where I am today is sort of the typical entrepreneurial approach, which is means it's not typical, right? It's not linear and it's not following necessarily doing these things in this specific order and everything goes according to plan. And then, you know, at day 5,000, you wind up here. I've always been entrepreneurial in terms of, as a kid, early in my career, starting businesses, selling businesses, buying businesses, that kind of thing. And simultaneously, which I thought was an unrelated track, quite frankly, was always passionate about good business content. You know, reading lots of business books, and back in the day when magazines, if you're under 30, Google that term, or paper, and they'd be pretty thick, and they'd come to this thing called a mailbox before the word "e" was there, and would be filled with information. I don't think they exist anymore, or they do, they're really, really skinny. You can put four in your pocket. Sure. So I was always consuming content, and then about, 12, 15 years ago, those two worlds came together when I was the COO of a boutique consulting firm, and then got recruited to come on board and lead a turnaround at a company that was basically in the content business, presentation skills company. So here we are today.
And then here you are today. What? Tell us about your book. And
about my,
for the audience. Book. Tell us about how to maximize the book. Sorry. Tell us how to maximize a book, not your book specifically. How do I maximize my book? So let's just turn on to a case study here and show people. So I wrote a book last year called Think Bold, Be Bold. That's a show. It's called The Success Playbook. Sure. Yeah. I wear many hats. So what do I do? Like, how, if I came to you, how are you going to help me?
Yeah. So first of all, in the spirit of full disclosure, I've talked more people out of writing books than anybody else I know. So that's sort of
all right. Great.
And there's a reason for that. And the reason is, I've been around the block. I've earned these gray stripes. More often than not, writing a book, and you, I would assume, would concur with this, is an enormous task. It takes a lot of time, energy, effort, resources, dollars, opportunity costs, etc. I had an opportunity to speak, it was a year or two ago, at a business book award event. So I spoke to, I had a room of about 40, 50 people that had just won best in class for the business book they wrote. So these are not knuckleheads. These are pretty smart folks that have written books. And I said to them, well, let's think about your book in terms of time, energy, investment that you spend, let's say from 6 months before it came out, when you're writing the book, to about 3, 4, 5 months after, right? So that big time crunch. And I asked them ultimately, what percentage of your time was dedicated to the book? And the average that we got was about 65%. I said, well, that's a big chunk of time, 65% of 9 months of your life. If I was good in math, I can figure that out, but I think it's a half a year. Right?
That's a big number.
Yeah. So then I said to them, great. So let's work backwards and figure out what percent of your income was directly derived from that effort, meaning book sales. And came about, wasn't 65%, wasn't 50, wasn't 40, 5%. So I said, wait a minute, can I make you that deal now to buy half a year of your time for 5% of your income? And nobody took the deal, right? So the reason I bring that up is if you're going to write a book, and writing a book is a great thing to do, there's a lot of work and strategic thinking you have to do and productization that you have to do before to say, why am I writing this book? What is the goals? What is success going to look like? So I'm not sitting here 6 months later, $100,000 upside down going, wow, that was like, giving birth to triplets or something. Like, what is success?
Not that we would ever know.
I hear it's not a good thing. I hear it's probably not fun. Unless you're on meds, knocked out for that.
Sure.
So I think, the there is no magic answer to here's how to make your book a success. Success means different things for different people. It could be, one of the reasons you were put on this planet is to write this book. More often than not, the people that I'm working with, it's about driving the business side of their world, the content side of their world. So who are you writing it for? How are you getting it out there? What is it? The world doesn't need another book on sales, leadership, management, all the things that we see. It needs a good book or somebody with something unique to say that I haven't heard before and that has a plan to get it out there. I don't know if that answered your question or not, but that's
Yeah, it does. And so I'll give you my perspective. I wrote my book for my kids. It was something to leave behind. It was always my objective. It was just something that I knew that I would do. It took me a little while to get there. Obviously, it takes an enormous amount of time. And it was, primarily for my family. Something that you know, will remain when I'm not. But it was something that I was able to leverage in many other ways, because people who, you know, hear that you wrote a book and you're an author, it lends some credibility. And that credibility then pushes things up. And I'm good at what I do from a sales consulting side. So generally, you know, that book came in handy. And not knowing it at the time, because it was called a playbook, I'm also a coach. And I run something called the Kick-Ass Sales Game. Mm-hmm. So without knowing it, like a lot of times, as you mentioned, as entrepreneurs, a lot of pivots, a lot of moves, but, you know, somehow the vision came together, and I've got a game, I've got a playbook, and I help coach people. So it does have something that I can lend now together, and that wasn't necessarily something that I knew at the time. But
right.
to the right. point, the book was something that I really wanted to do. And, you know, put that effort in. It was very difficult, you know, running businesses. And I found unique ways to be able to do it and get it done and publish it and so forth. Is it paying the bills? Not directly, but it's doing something along that journey, as you're mentioning, and that's probably how you help people with what they can do with it, and obviously reverse engineer, as I'm hearing, where do you want to go with it? What do you want it to do? You know, and so forth and so on. So interesting. Thank you for sharing that. And for those who want to write a book, you know, talk to Peter first, and he'll help you reverse engineer it. Alan, what do we got? What do we got for Peter?
Increasing our digital DNA is something that you hear a lot about in all sorts of medias today, and expanding our brand and so forth. And a lot of ways to do that is to take the things we know that work, take the things that Peter, you mentioned a minute ago, that create scale, that generate business, that generate income or value, or push your idea a little farther down the path. How do we take what we know that works, we've already created in some form, some message, some tool, and how do we repurpose that? Why do we repurpose that? And how do we use that then to gain that scale and to gain that exposure that we haven't been able to get so far?
Yeah, it's a great point. So one of the things that's pretty unique about being in the content business, which to me means you're generating an income based on your thoughts, your ideas, your concepts, your models, mm-hmm. etc., is that most folks in this business are inherently creative people, right? They love to create stuff. They love mm-hmm. to write. They love to blog. They love to do all these sort of things to get it out there. And in some degree, strictly from an efficiency standpoint, from a business best practices standpoint, it's kind of dumb, right? So if you were in the real estate business and you liked the part where you got to design homes and build them, but not so much the part where you like to rent them or sell them, you'd be bankrupt pretty quickly, right? However, in the content space, you just sell just enough to keep your head above water and keep creating and creating and creating to survive. My clients don't hire me to survive, right? They bring us on board to help them thrive. So one of the things you mentioned, repurposing, it's a combination of constantly getting stuff out into the market. So quick, easy things, blogs, videos, etc., and then putting on your business hat and doing some analytics, right? So it doesn't matter what you think. So like I've written hundreds of blogs, and if you were to ask me when I wrote them, which are the ones that would do better than others, I would be wrong 100% of the time. So that's great. So what I've learned is I don't care what I think. What I've learned is put it out there, watch the data, and sometimes the things that you think were that was the worst thing I've ever written, resonates, and something times you think that breakthrough that you had that's going to be your, you know, E=mc², crickets. So you follow the data and you put it out there, and then you go, wow, okay, so if they liked it in a blog, what else can I do with that? I can turn it into an infographic. Yeah. I can turn it into an animated video. I can turn it into do another piece on it, extend that concept, do an interview based on whatever that piece of information is, and you refine it, you get smarter and smarter, and repurpose it. I mean, some of the best things that we've put out there from a marketing perspective for us started as a blog, and now there's like 8 flavors of the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. And part of that mm-hmm. reason is people have a content consumption preference, right? And a lot of times we don't think about mm-hmm. that. So we think everybody thinks like us. If I like to write, then I view the world through the lens of, well, everybody likes to read, right? If I like video, then I view the world through the lens of everybody only watches TED Talks. The trick is you're not that smart. The trick is get it out. You know, there's one group of people that like to watch videos, one group that like to read, others that like more visual. Sometimes we all like a little bit of each. And if you're only serving one modality, you're eliminating and putting an unnatural limit on the reach of your work.
Perfect. Great holistic solution to the, you know, how do I make this better? How do I make this provide more for me? How do I make this scale? How do I make this better for the end user? And how do I reach more people with the same book?
Exactly.
Perfect. So sorry, I'm writing notes here as I'm talking. If my head's down, it's because I've got notes all over my book. So it's not that I'm not paying attention. I'm just writing a lot of notes.
Same thing. Yeah. And that's what we do. You know, I write down certain things that come to me as you're talking or we're talking or an idea comes. But let me ask you a question and get some clarity for the audience, whether they're watching live or, you know, listening in later. Thought leadership. What is it? You know, it's a great concept. Who wants to do that? Who wants to be that? You know, give us a perspective from your point of view, Peter, on what all that means.
Yeah. So first, let me define what it is according to me, which may or may not be right. Right. So there's two elements to thought leadership. There's thought and there's leadership. Right. So the flip side of that is, thoughtless followership. I would actually argue that there's a lot of thoughtless followership out there. Just
I would agree.
Something, geez, I've read this 38 times before. So one is thoughtful. People are not stupid. We are blessed to live in a time where we have access to more information in more formats from more places in the planet than anyone in the history of the world. That's a great thing. However, time has become our scarcest resource. So I am not going to spend 5 hours reading a book that is drivel, that is just thoughtless, that is nothing. So that's the thought piece. The leadership piece means what are you doing to take whatever the discipline, the field, the space that you're in, sales, marketing, leadership, agility, resilience, negotiations, and be a leader there. So it doesn't mean you ignore everyone else in the space, but what are you doing to add to the conversation, to add to the dialogue, to get that discipline to a next phase? So that's my definition of it. The other thing I would say is you don't get there by calling yourself a thought leader. You know, guru makes me nauseous when I hear that I'm the guru of
Thank
whatever.
You.
It's your peers and others that say, you know what, Christopher is a thought leader in blah, blah, blah. Right. And, you know, don't call yourself that. So it's for others to acknowledge
about
what your contribution to the conversation.
Gotcha. Well, that's a great explanation. Thanks. And what about the love guru, though? Come on. Can we not be love gurus?
All right. Well, yeah, that's outside of my practice. Yeah. But you want to be a
that's
guru,
a different podcast
be...
for a different day.
Yeah.
That's where Mr. Midnight might come into play.
It's a family show here. We got to be good.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. Well, thanks for outlining that, and I appreciate your viewpoint on it. And I agree. You know, today, more and more, it's about attention. You know, there's a lot coming at us. I mean, the TV, internet is where the TV was, you know, 40 years ago. And now that we have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you know, Snapchat, I mean, they're all channels. They're all channels to get information out and so forth. And, you know, how does one, you know, from your perspective, you know, choose the lane, you know, that they want to swim in and then, you know, omit some of the other things that are going on, or where do you bring them in at certain points? Because that's obviously important. We need that, you know, do this stuff today in order to get the attention out there. So, you know, from your point of view and what you've seen and what you work with people on, where does that fit in from a social media side of things?
How would I think about that? So that's largely a tactical question. And again, you know, you have to start with the strategy. So if you know who you are, if you know the market you're going to serve, if you know how you're going to serve them, then you got to figure out where to reach them. So you can't do that until you answer those questions. And what I find that happens too often is social media is cool, right? So Snapchat is cool, whatever. I don't make money being cool. I make money making money for my clients, right? So I need to figure out, you know, certain clients, LinkedIn is a great place to be. Other clients, if they're more visual, maybe Instagram. It depends on the demographic, the psychographic, et cetera. But people start going nuts and the, you know, one day they're a Twitter expert because they read an article. And then they're tweeting all over the place. Mm-hmm. And then the next week they go, oh, have you heard of Snap? You know, whatever. I think you have to have floppers. A strategy. What's that?
They're floppers. I call them floppers. Not a bad thing. But it's a soccer term, but they're floppers. You know, they're creating something that doesn't exist.
So I think, you know, if you've got your strategy, you know where the people are that you're trying to reach, then you use whatever tools that are out there to reach them within reason. And it's, you know, there's only so many things that you can do simultaneously. So, the, you know, the other thing I would say is for most thought leaders, that's not even a question they should be answering directly.
Right.
They should have the help. Their job is to create the best content out there mm-hmm. in the best way that they can and do the research and serve their clients, et cetera. Most of the, I mean, you should have a little bit better than a cursory understanding of the landscape of social media, but I don't know any of my successful clients that are really figuring out, like, you know, how many tweets am I going to do today? If you're sort of in that place, you got to scratch your head and go, the hell am I doing?
Yes. That's the best use of your time. Great. And that's why I wanted to bring it up. And great answer and great perspective on that is because I think that a lot of people, you know, just start to do everything. And they get overwhelmed and nothing happens. And like you said earlier, it's crickets. Because there was no objective or strategy to, you know, reverse engineer what path they wanted to get the attention of the people they're trying to get the attention from, whether it's Facebook, social, Instagram, Twitter, whatever, you know, it may be. So thank you. Thank you for that clarity.
Yeah. You know, I think human nature is such because we all work hard. We're all doing the right thing. Is that we confuse activity with productivity. So if I'm tweeting all day, that felt like I accomplished something, but
what's the end result?
Why are you doing it? Like, what's the point in doing it? Answer those questions and did it achieve an objective? If not, kind of noise.
Yeah. And just because others are doing it doesn't necessarily mean it's the right thing to do or it's going to actually scale where you're at. Peter, I want to go back a second. You talked about adding value to the conversation and so forth. And I think really good thought leaders and good entrepreneurs who really have a good handle on the value that they offer look towards ideas of movement. How can I create a movement, if you will, with this idea, with this plan to really increase value for their organization or for their end user, whoever that might be. Talk to us a little bit about your experience in creating and generating and the longevity of a movement.
Yeah, let me answer that question in two ways. The first way that I would say it is the way to make money in the content business is really, really simple. Ready? Here we go. Listen it, right? You're in the business of changing behaviors at an individual level, people level, mm-hmm. that in the aggregate drive some business levers that are measurable.
Right?
Full stop. Right? So if you can show that by getting your work out to large groups of people in an organization, X happens. I sell more stuff. I shorten my sales cycle. Customer engagement goes up. I mean, there aren't that many things in business that we measure. There's, mm-hmm. Well, there actually are lots, but in terms of key things that you drive, if you can make mm-hmm. the case that your stuff does that at a cost, you know, at a net benefit, meaning the client's getting more benefit than they're paying you for it, bang, that's a winner. Right. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes as a thought leader, people are too stuck in their own stuff and not realize, you know, they're stuck in the theoretical, not thinking about the applied. So if I'm a buyer, if I'm General Electric and I think you've got the greatest thing on sales, why would I spend $1 million on it? Well, I'm not going to spend $1 million on it because you're smart or snarky or I like your graphs or your models. I'm going to spend $1 million on it because I'm going to get some multiple of that million back in some way that I measure it.
Sure.
Period. Right. Now, where that doesn't play is in the consumer space. If you're in the self-help or whatever space, that's cool. That's an emotional satisfaction, and that's cool. That's not the place mm-hmm. that we practice. So that's number one. I mean, you mentioned a movement. A movement is really, to me, almost the byproduct of doing it well. Mm-hmm. You typically don't start with the movement, but it's like your stuff catches on. People use it. It makes their lives better, happier, more complete. Gets them to do their job better, whatever. And then mm-hmm. they talk to others and they talk to others and they share it. And then you've got a movement. It's the movement
it propagates
has to come
on its
after.
Own.
Yeah. I mean, you have to support that and design that and engineer mm-hmm. that. I think what happens a lot is people want to start with, I'm going to create a movement to do X. And it's like, okay, but nobody knows who the heck you are and you haven't accomplished anything. And there's no measurable outcome of it. And all you did was get up there and say something cool in a TED talk. So now what?
Right. Yeah. Now
yeah.
What? Now
yeah. What's that? What's that? What ingredient is that in what recipe?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So what's the
challenging?
Right. And what's the current state of content, you know, business? Where are we now? Like what's going on in the marketplace that you're seeing that you can share with people?
It's an incredibly exciting time. I'll give you the good news and the bad news. The bad news is, or less than ideal news, if you're something like this, is
sure.
The publishing business is an oxymoron, right? So to me, a business is something that generates more profit than resources it done. Publishing, which was a traditional cornerstone of thought leadership and content, as a business is really crappy right now.
Yeah.
Speaking is hard because you have a business with zero cost, zero barriers to entry. Everybody puts up a shingle, I'm a speaker, etc. Mm-hmm. So those are harder. Doesn't mean you don't want to be in those spaces and there aren't ways to be successful there. But the traditional model of 10 years ago for not a rock star thought leader or you know, it doesn't have to be a Jim Collins or whatever, but there's plenty of room for folks to write a book about every 18 months, get a decent advance, relatively speaking, and then go out there and speak and make a really nice living, rinse, lather, repeat, whatever.
Sure.
If you're not getting that advance and the profits off of a book and speaking's harder, that's interesting, right? So that's really the reason why we do what we do is there are more ways to consume content today than ever before.
Right.
And you have to know that. And it's the business side of content has gotten far more complex, far more technical, far more global than ever before. You know, most people can pretty much understand the business model of publishing and speaking pretty easily and go, okay, here's some things I need to do. But now you've got things, you've got licensing, you've got assessment tools, you've got video-based learning systems, you've got, the world is global. The fastest growing market for management content purchasers is BRIC, Brazil, Russia, India, China, because they've got the fastest growing management class in the history of the world. And they tend to love North American things. A lot of people don't, you know, so that's an interesting data point. Most authors and thought leaders go, geez, how would I get my stuff in India, huh? Okay, well, you're probably not going to figure that out on your own.
Right.
Right.
So I think, you know, the short answer is the old ways are not the ways that are going to continue to thrive in the future. And mastering sort of all the things that are happening digital and sort of the newer ways to get content out there at scale is really where the money is. And there's never, and you have one other point to that, the other sort of way to monetize your content and your thought leadership is not just through the traditional training and development educational path that most people have gone. You know, I'm I've got content on X and I'm going to train people on it in various ways.
Sure.
But the marketing side of many organizations is actually a big consumer of content to give away to clients and prospects. And we've all seen that on various commercials and all that kind of thing. That's interesting, right? So they're basically borrowing and leveraging your brand. It's no different than what celebrity endorsement was for consumer products,
right,
or it still is for consumer products. Why did, you know, somebody's driving a fancy car and I guess I should get one, and, you know, that kind of thing. Similar patterns are happening more in the B2B space with thought leaders on the marketing side.
Awesome. Cool. I want to follow up a little bit with that in a unique way. So maybe it's not really a follow up at all. Say we've got new entrepreneurs. How's how you like that? Say we've got new entrepreneurs out there, people that have been in business or been an employee, really. Let's say what it is, they've been an employee for 20 years and they're finding out the traditional employment, you know, avenues are falling by the wayside. There's disruption happening in every industry.
Yep.
And now they want to take some of their wisdom, some of the things that they've learned, because they've learned some great things that can help either the younger side of them or learning how to take an idea and bring it to fruition. There's value in that. But they don't necessarily know where to begin, how to start. How do I take this knowledge that I've gained, this tool, let's call it a tool, if you will, how do I get in a marketplace to give the biggest benefit to the largest group of an ideal demographic as possible? Where do I start?
Strategy.
Any idea strategy?
A, it's strategy. B, it's strategy. And C, it's strategy. But you know, the other thing is you can't be a – or you could, but it's not going to work out well. You can't be a 45-year-old executive in whatever. You've got some depth of knowledge, expertise, whatever. Leave that and the next day go say, now I'm something else, right? So you need to be – you know, if you look backwards a little bit, the whole personal branding thing that started with Tom Peters, you know, I don't know, 20-something years ago or whatever – is a little bit different today. The personal branding today is not just, you know, I'm a connector or whatever that is, but you have more opportunity to demonstrate that through writing and sharing and all those type of things. So if you're in that place, I would say there's lots of things you should be doing before you sort of sign your papers at HR. Right. So,
right.
You know, right. Start easy. If you're, hey, I'm not a writer, I don't know how to know. Okay, well, curate stuff and share it with people in your industry, in your space. Get to be known as someone. Then try to add some new things to it. And, you know, that doesn't take a lot of time, energy, and effort. You know, you can put aside 2-3 hours a week. You can get some damage done and get a sense of it and see what it is. Mm-hmm. It's not that easy to just go out there and say, oh, here I am, world, come and find me.
Yeah, it's very difficult. People, I think, are enamored with what they see. What they don't know is behind the scenes, the 36 months that led up to that, right?
Yeah,
and the scars and the bumps and the bruises that go to that. And I think there's a lot of folks, I think a couple of years ago, there was a lot of movement in the personal development space that you can go out right off the bat and data aggregate a bunch of information, the top 10, 20 things from the top 10, 20 people, and you can take that, you can package that, and you can sell that. It's okay to do that. The challenge comes with that is when somebody comes back to you and says, okay, what happened here, here, and here when we did these three things? Well, the person that data aggregated has absolutely no clue how to integrate those changes. So there became a lull in the industry of how do we deal with that? And I think a lot of those folks that got on the bandwagon here realized there wasn't a lot of longevity in that. And so I guess a question is when it comes to information, and I you know, I know the answer to this because both Chris and I know you do, but there's a lot of folks that bought into taking somebody else's information, taking what's available in the marketplace and trying to repackage it and repurpose it and make a livelihood out of that. I think that's very difficult. What has the biggest value? Taking great information that's already been done, or taking a personal story, a personal experience that has an exact trajectory and a set of results that was really good, and focusing that to that demographic to make an impact. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. What I would sort of maybe disagree a touch on that is at some level, I kind of don't care as the buyer, because oftentimes we don't think about enough from being in the content space of what does the buyer need and what do they want? And we're too stuck in our, is this my idea, whatever. What do they want? They want an outcome and a result, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously they would prefer something unique, but if you have a way to package, position, pivot, twist, do something a little bit different with a body of work that's out there, assuming you're not violating copyright laws and that kind of things, great, do it. Because a wise buyer in the corporate space, I'm not talking about the personal development side, because that's a whole different set of criteria there, success criteria. But on the corporate side, on the business side, which is where we practice, not because you know, we have some sort of an intellectual bias there, but you rob banks because that's where the money is, right?
yeah.
So makes a ton of sense. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the corporate and financial industry, the world, dealing with that specifically as the number one reason for aggregation, there's only a handful of things that you do, okay? And like you were saying, there's only so many things that you can do, and repurposing some of those things or ideas are great. I think a lot of people, though, are finding that they want to play in that, but they're actually over here in the personal development or self-help world, and they don't, and this happens. Because they don't have that way to really scale or monetize it. They become one of them, you know, the group
But not knowing the world that you're in is a big mistake. And I see this a lot. And I think, you know, one of the litmus tests, to me, there's three markets for content. There's the individual consumer market, right? Mm-hmm. There's the SMB, small and mid-sized business, which is actually 20 subsets of entrepreneurs and high growth companies, et cetera. And then there's the Fortune 1000 government agencies, NGO, you know, big global mm-hmm. scale organizations. You can be in two of those markets at once, but they have to be next to each other. So you can be an SMB and big business at once, or SMB and consumer at once. You can't be in consumer and big business at the same time. And if you're not sure where your stuff fits, the litmus test is, if I worked at IBM or fill in the blank for a big company, Citibank, would I have the audacity to expense this as something that would benefit me professionally? And if it doesn't meet that test, you're in the consumer space. And again, if you choose to be there, that's great. Not a place we choose to practice, but that's got a whole different set of rules and standards and mm-hmm. you know, the information marketing business, which is a lot of sizzle, not a lot of steak.
Right.
So you're selling.
Yeah. I like that.
You want to hear that, you know, here's the diet book that says you can eat cookies all day. Well, no, you can't. Right. Here's the book that says for a dollar a day, you can make it rich in real estate. No, you can't.
Mm-hmm. Bring it to you like it. Yeah. Bringing it to you like it is. yeah. Peter, I love the way you approach things, and I love what you've done. And, you know, we've worked with some pretty incredible companies. And, you know, it's very impressive, you know, if people have a look. So on that note, where do people connect with you? You know, a CEO listening in right now, or someone at a C-level, you know, looking at what they want to do in this space and content, how do they get a hold of you? What could they expect when they get a hold of you? Give us a perspective on that.
Well, the how is easy. They can go to the website, which is thoughtleadershipleverage.com. They can email me directly at peter@thoughtleadershipleverage.com. You can find me on Twitter, which is @PeterWinnick. The usual, you know, LinkedIn, all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
The website's probably the best place.
The first place.
Yeah, that's probably the best place. And, you know, where we start with folks, which probably won't be shocking now that we're getting towards the sort of the tail end of this, is always on something strategic, right? So we never take on, hey, my book's coming out in 6 weeks, and you help me market the book. No.
sure.
Oh, what do you think of my social, blah, blah, blah? No, it's like there's two entry points. There's strategy engagement, or what we call an enterprise readiness assessment, which is an evaluation of an organization's readiness to succeed in the enterprise space. So that's where we start. And we don't deviate from that. Every time we've done that in the last dozen years, we've regretted it, so we don't do it anymore. Took us, most people don't make the same mistake twice. I think we made it twice, but
well,
we won't
make
it a third time. That's for
you just wanted to try again, see what you can do.
Yeah.
But
I forgot what it was like to burn my hand.
Try it again.
Yes. I think I fit into that a little bit there as well. So, so we'll post that and make sure that people can get a hold of you. And, you know, definitely, when we go to get this out into the networks, we'll make it very clear, based on what you offer. So appreciate that. Alan, what else do we have? Man, this time just, you know, when you're having fun and it's great content and we're listening to, someone who's got, you know, an enormous amount of experience. We really appreciate it, Peter, coming on our show and sharing the things that you know. It's always hard to squeeze it all in. It's all hard to squeeze it in, but there's lots of ways, like you said, that you can get a hold of Peter. For the audience out there, take them up on it, you know, and if it's something that's resonating, and certainly within our network of people, I'm starting to think about some of the people I've worked with that can certainly use some of the stuff that I've read about that you do, and obviously what we're talking about right now. So we'll be a great conduit for that as well, Peter, going forward. Alan, what else can we squeeze in before we start to tail end on this show?
Before we wind down and before we wind down. You're awesome, which of course you are, Peter. get real. How do you sort this? And maybe this is a little too close to call, but, or maybe I shouldn't ask, but I'll ask it anyway. How do you guys, or what criteria do you use to sort your kind of clients, so that people that feel that they want to use your, maybe they're going to repackage or repurpose or redirect how they approach you? What's your sorting tool for bringing somebody on and taking on their responsibility of helping, you know, scale a company, an individual, or a business?
So there's two. So we have four distinct client types. It's not an exact science, but the pattern seems to hold. So one group of our clients are authors and speakers, right? So they've written a book or 10. They're doing 50, 100 keynotes a year. They realize that's not sustainable. They want to take it to the next level. That's one group. Second group is we do a lot of work with elite academics. We have clients at Yale, at Wharton, London School of Business, Tux up at Dartmouth, et cetera. Really, 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 really smart folks in the academic world. And all of a sudden something happens. Yeah, no, nor I. But I get the sweatshirts when I go up there. But they've done something that's caused them to get an unexpected flood of positive attention. It could be a TED Talk, a nomination for Nobel Prize, whatever. And they're getting a lot of demand that they don't know what to do with. So that's another group.
Right.
Third group that we deal with are boutique consultancies around the world in various spaces. So consultancy, and I'm a consultant, so it's not a bad thing. You're in the body business, right? So you're selling people's time, ultimately, and that is a business that typically only grows arithmetically. If you're doing it a long time, you actually, as a byproduct of that, you've created a lot of stuff, models and tools, and maybe you've written a book or whatever, and they want to start to look at that side of the house and go, what could I do with all these idle assets? And then the last group that we deal with are CEOs, co-founders, CXOs, etc., of either high growth, high visibility companies that are at that sort of pre-IPO, IPO, immediately post-IPO stage, or super senior level exec CEOs in the Fortune 500 that are going to leave the C-suite soon and move on to that next phase in life, which it used to be you retired at 62 and you were dead at 65, so you didn't have to worry about that a lot. But now we're living a long time, so they want to do something for some period of time.
Phase two.
And they're relevant. You know, they want to stay relevant about something. So that's one way we select. And the other way is price. I mean, quite frankly, in this space, there's a lot of broke people. We're not the Red Cross. If you can't afford us, I'm sorry. But, you know, and if you're not willing to make an investment in yourself and your business, then it tells us that you're not serious. So between understanding the client segments and having a price point that is fair and reasonable and one where clients get value from, cool, but you know, I get asked all the time to do, you know, things for free, and it's like, would you go to your dentist and say, if you do these three cavities for free, I think I got five more for you next year? It's just not the way.
It doesn't work. There's a market for that, but that's not what we're talking about.
Exactly.
It's a friends and family version, and that's not the arena you play in. Well, that's cool. That's great.
If you do, I did too. And certainly some CEOs and C-suites, high growth came to mind that I know, you know, looking at phase two and what do they do and keep the accolades that they've been able to accomplish, you know, moving forward and helping others. They're in that new sort of mindset. You know, they've gotten their companies to where they, you know, feel, and now what can they do to help others? And there's a lot of people that I am connected with. So Peter, you've got some people that I'm going to introduce you to for sure.
Likewise.
I can think, that I can think of right off the top of my head. I actually wrote a list there as you were talking. Peter, thanks for taking some time out. You know, we always really appreciate, especially, you know, busy people like yourself that, you know, come on our show, but have something, you know, of great value for those who, you know, fit your personas, you know, those people that, you know, you talked about just recently in those four buckets. We always have something in our show that we, you know, really appreciate when someone leaves something for someone that's listened in, you know, has what you, you know, have to offer. But getting to where you've grown as well. I mean, you've had personal growth and, you know, what can you leave people with today as a bold move that, you know, you can think about, you either talked about, and I know maybe you did say strategy, and strategy is a big thing, is know what you want, you know, at the end of it, but, and that could be it. But is there anything else that you want to leave with, you know, our audience today that would suggest that, you know, where they want to go and maybe something that you can give them as a little golden nugget to get their butts up and go do it?
Yes, if I said no now, that would be horribly disappointing. So I'm going to have to come up with something. I can't go to like exit theme music like he said. What I would say is it's certainly true for me as a business owner, as well as my clients that do the best, is honesty and self-awareness and introspection, right? So the clients that have struggled the most before weren't necessarily, not that they were dishonest, but they weren't self-aware or introspective enough to realize that, you know, yeah, just because you're super duper smart in X doesn't mean that that's naturally going to translate into everything that you touch.
Right. And,
you know, it's okay to get some help, right? Like I suck at details, as my team will tell you, you know, I know what I'm good at, you know, I'm good at strategy and I'm good at generating business. Project management, if you gave that to me, the project will not be met, you know, like deadlines won't happen, but I have the utmost respect for processes and systems and, you know, in our organization, we've got a couple of people that that's all they do. So I was smart enough to get people that are really gifted in a space that's a weakness for me personally to build out the capabilities of the team. So organizationally, you know, that's not a big weakness for us. Weakness for me, but figured out how to get around it.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, you focus on what you do and you know, you hire the rest out. Let somebody else work their genius. It's not yours. And that, you know, a lot of people are afraid to let go of that. So appreciate that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Great having you on the show. Appreciate you very much, Peter. Thanks for coming. And we'll make sure that a lot of folks that get this, even if they don't want it, we're going to give it to them anyway. We'll make sure
that's
that they have access to – there you go. We'll make sure that all the contact information is given their way. Thanks again. Chris, as usual, the blast, my friend, doing this with you. Take us away.
I always have fun. I'm always having fun. And, you know, this show is a lot of fun. And to the point, you know, we repurpose and we put it on YouTube and we have all these touch points out there. So I really enjoyed this. You know, it did a lot for me thinking. And I always really enjoy someone who can help me ponder thought and think about my own strategies and things that I'm working on. And so I really appreciate that part of it for sure. And I know the audience would appreciate some of the things and probably a lot of the things that you had to offer. They might not even fit into your buckets, but, you know, just little things that can make them, you know, think a little bit and come from a different place and understand what thought leadership is. So that's one thing I hear a lot of, but, you know, I like your definition of it and it makes a ton of sense and really appreciate that. So on that note, if anybody's looking for guests like Peter, let us know. Even though we've got a full plate, we've got lots going on, we've always appreciated comments and anything that you want to send, questions, info@thinkboldbebold.com. Of course, you can come to Facebook and post, and we'll be sure to add Peter into this so that he can do some comments back and forth, and you can get to know a little bit about his company and what they do that can help you if you fit into those buckets. Appreciate you, Peter. Thank you, and enjoy your day. I'm going to try it. I'm going to try to. It's a little thundery and crazy cracking and everything out here at the beach, but the sun's always shining behind the clouds, I say, and we'll have some fun anyway. And for everybody out there, it wouldn't be a show without me saying, do something nice for someone today.